Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Clempire, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, how are you?
What's I'm good. It's good to be back.
Oh, yeah? Where were you?
Well, I was in Hawaii. I was first there with the Big Island Jazz and Blues Festival.
Oh, I saw some of that. You posted some footage. I did.
With our guest here. Yeah, he was along for the...
way the crowd looked, it should have been the Big Island Geritol Festival.
Well, it's an icy hot crowd, but, you know...
A lot of old white people, man.
No, they had the middle school hula hoop contest going on in the middle of the week.
So
That was for the pedophiles? Is that what that was for?
I don't know. Something for everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were over there, had a terrific lineup. They got me on stage. You know, I usually try to not be up there the whole time, you know, to kind of...
Now, is this like a three-day event?
It's a three-day event, more or less. They have like, but there's one main day, which is like the big show where everybody plays a full set, you know.
And
this time we had all our friends there, and everybody wanted the Iguanas to back them up. So I got on stage and was there for 3 hours and 15 minutes without leaving.
It's like a Bruce Springsteen concert.
All these different artists came up and did their sets, and we backed them all up, and it was
now this is sponsored by Geritol or Icy Hot?
No, it has a lot of sponsors. I don't think either of those are named sponsors, but you know, who knows what goes on behind the scenes. But there's a lot of corporate sponsorship. The Mauna Kea Beach Resort is a big sponsor where they put the thing on. That's where we all stayed.
Oh.
And extended the trip a little bit longer this time and actually went to the wet side of the Big Island, which I'd never been to. There's a dry
side.
There's a dry side and a wet side.
But isn't it all surrounded by water?
Well, yeah. But
so it's all wet, right?
Well, if you go into the ocean is wet everywhere, yeah. But like on the dry side...
Don't you feel claustrophobic on an island?
It's a pretty big island, you know?
Because you're just surrounded. It's like being on one of those cruise ships. You just can't get off.
Well, you know? I mean, maybe
you can't get off the island if you want. You know, I got to get off this island.
No, you couldn't swim off.
Okay.
You
know? I've been on the Isle of Danau for quite a long time.
Yeah.
But
no man is an island.
No man is an island.
I don't know what that means. I've heard that for millions of years. I still don't know what that means.
It means we're all connected. We all have to rely on each other at some point. You know, we can't be isolated.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, that's what that phrase means.
Really, does it?
Yeah.
Because I wake up every day, and like clockwork, someone always ruins my day.
Sure.
So I don't think that's a connection.
Well, you know it's maybe you can't get away with being solitary, but that's no guarantee that everyone you meet is going to be helpful. You have to learn to pick and choose. But anyway, got to go to the wet side of the island and stay in Volcano, Hawaii, which is like the closest town to Volcano National Park. And they have Mount Kilauea there. And
what is the fun of that?
Well, did
it go off the volcano?
It did, yes, while I was still there.
While you were jacking off?
It
shot its load, too.
Sure. You know, the more the merrier. No, it actually interrupted me. I was in my Airbnb when I saw it going off. It was like maybe 9:30 or something like that. And our guest was there and close by, and he had been there all day at the park, and it was just smoking, and we kept waiting for something to happen, and then finally at night this thing started erupting 1,200 feet into the air. It was crazy, like as tall as the
Empire State
Building.
How come I didn't see any pictures of that?
Because
you had only one free hand, right?
I did put some pictures of that. You must not have looked at all my pictures. I don't look at many
pictures.
Well, there you go. So yeah. I did because you didn't look. That's why. But anyway, it's that was a tremendous experience. Even people that live in Hawaii I spoke to them afterwards, and they said, well, we've seen eruptions, but it's usually where the lava is just rolling out and running across the ground. It's very, it's a special event.
They were talking about the volcano or your eruption?
Well, they're the volcano in this case, but it's a special event to have it, a fountain eruption like that, as they call it, you know, going. So we were 7 miles away, but the thing was so huge, it looked like it was right there. Anyway. So did you miss me?
No, it was probably some of the best time off I've had in a while.
Okay, nice, nice. What did you do?
But I got to tell you, I went, mm-hmm. What was that guest we had on a while back who was going to pair music with food? What was that guy's name?
Oh, Tony Toko.
Yeah,
Cafe Atchafalaya, Atchafalaya.
I went there for brunch.
Mm-hmm.
Because he suggested I go there for brunch.
They have a terrific brunch, yeah.
And I thought it was way too rich, the food. But anyway, he was talking about pairing music with food and all that. Mm-hmm. So when I made the reservation, I said, well, I don't really care for music with food. So I told him I want to be seated as far away from the band as possible.
Okay.
Which they accommodated me.
All right.
But what I found interesting was, you know, they had this like jazz trio playing. Mm-hmm. You could hear them faintly in the background and stuff like that. And I'm thinking to myself, talking to my wife, I'm saying, well, this is about pairing music with food. He's got jazz for this, and I guess it goes with this dish. I don't know. But then the band took a break, and through the speakers, you know, I thought his whole thing was about pairing New Orleans music with food and stuff like that. Through the speakers, they were blasting Aerosmith.
Okay.
It's just like, well, this doesn't go with this.
Right.
You know, I'm not eating a Boston bean pie or anything like that, you know, a Boston baked bean pie. I didn't understand it at all. But the waiter was very nice. I liked him a lot. He was a good guy. But I didn't understand the whole thing about this music with food thing. There was no like a tutorial on it. You know, you'd think the waiter would tell you something about it. This dish will go good with this song, you know, or whatever like that. But
are they pushing that during the brunch? I thought that was kind of a television show they're developing there.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know that that's something they always try to do. I mean, they have music while you're eating.
The best part of the meal was that we dined in Ditch. That was the best part.
You know? Well, shout out to Tony Toko.
That was
really lovely of him to treat us to those. I have yet to go have a meal there, but have it on my calendar.
Turtle soup.
I don't get treated. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, I thought you did.
No.
But anyway, I think that may be the case.
Yeah, so that was something that happened, and, you know, I don't think I'll go there again, but we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see.
It's a terrific restaurant. Anyway, has this ever happened to you before? We're all flying to Hawaii, connecting through Denver. There's maybe like 8 or 9 people who are going to be at the festival coming from New Orleans Airport, and it's
people
early.
You knew?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, Wayne Toups, Lynn Drury, Charlie Halloran, Bruce Sunpie Barnes, other people who I'm forgetting right now, but. Anyway, so the plane was there. They give you text updates if you sign up. You know, say, well, your plane is here. Everything's on time. We get there to the airport, and they say, well, the flight is delayed by 3 hours, almost 4 hours. You go, well, why is the plane delayed? Turns out the pilot stayed at a hotel where he said the fire alarm went off 4 times during the night. And so he woke up and said, I didn't get any sleep. I'm invoking my fatigue exception.
Well, that's probably a good idea.
A.K.A. Rick's.
Rick's Cabaret.
Yes.
Well, in the moment, I was thinking, you know, as a pilot of a plane, don't you only have to work about 2 minutes at takeoff and about 2 minutes at landing? The rest of the time, the plane mostly flies itself.
I have no idea.
It seems like that. Autopilot, they call it. But I was thinking, this guy doesn't know the you know, primary motivating axiom of showbiz, certainly, which is the show must go on. I was thinking, you know, my mother's 85 years old. If she had gotten no sleep, I guarantee you she'd be in that fucking cockpit if she had to stab herself in the leg with a screwdriver to stay awake, you know?
So this upset you?
Well, yeah, because it actually caused us a whole day. We had to make other arrangements. At one point, they were saying, well, the next available flight is the same one 2 days from now. And we're like, no, that's not going to work.
Well, he'll have enough sleep by then.
Well, yeah, that's not going to work for us.
Yeah.
But we had to...
I'd rather have a well-rested pilot.
Okay.
Than, you know, someone who's, you know... got the shakes or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I'd take my chances to get there on time, but whatever. Yeah. To each his own.
So you were late by a day.
Yeah, we had to go through San Francisco, you know, spend the night there. It was a whole lot of rigmarole. Anyway, we did get there, and the whole thing went off. But yeah, that's a first for me. The pilot was too tired.
I you know,
the truth hurts.
Yeah. Sheesh,
yeah.
Man.
No, that seems all right. I would rather have a well-rested pilot.
All right. Well,
you know. But speaking about that, did you hear just today, I think, or yesterday, there was a airline that had to they couldn't take off. They had to get all the passengers off because of a bomb threat.
I did see that in the news today. Yeah.
And they caught the guy who did the bomb threat. And the reason why he did the bomb threat is because he didn't make that flight.
Yeah.
So he thought he would call him, and then maybe they'll let me on since they're not leaving just yet.
Right. Just cause a slight delay.
Well, a lot of those people ending up in countries that they can't spell.
Right. Well, I remember flying back from Vegas to L.A. We had gone there for a day or two, a couple of buddies of mine, and we didn't have enough money for the flight back. We had enough money for two tickets, and my one friend, who's crazy going nuts, he tried to sneak in on the baggage. He tried to sneak in through the baggage.
In a bag?
Well, no, he just
I was
going to
say, you went like old
He just kind of climbed, you know, the carousel?
Uh-huh.
He kind of climbed up through that.
Really?
Yeah, and he tried to get up there, and... he didn't make it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that
and,
would work out.
And we flew home without him. Yeah, but he stayed and he won $8,000.
Wow!
At a slot machine in the airport casino.
Wow! Well, it all works out.
Yeah, it all worked out for him.
I was just gonna say they had slot machines in the jail.
Yeah.
They do. Yeah, they got them everywhere, man.
One is mailman.
Right.
So that guy wasn't too bright. It's just like, you know, maybe. But it's something I think that's something when you're young you do.
Well, he's a 23-year-old kid. He was late for his flight, called in the bomb threat, and then I guess they rebooked him on another flight.
Right.
And then when he went to show up for to make his other flight, they arrested him.
Yeah.
He didn't see that coming. He thought this is going to be all smooth sailing.
Yeah.
Cognition.
Right.
Yeah, so he... it's not that big a fine apparently. Apparently his court date's like sometime in June. It was a $10,000 bail which he posted.
And they already released him.
Yeah, they already released him.
And now that brings up another thing. It's been an ongoing subject here on the podcast and just in local news in general, even national news, the Orleans Parish prison escape.
Yeah.
And when we had the last podcast 2 weeks ago, you were saying already they'd been out for like 10 days. They'd been on the loose.
And it was just
those two guys.
Yeah.
And you were saying, well, what's the over-under on this? You were saying, I think 16 days might be the...
And it's over that.
The over-under. And now that's like... 14 more days, so now they must be up to 24 days or something. Same two guys, and one of them I saw has started posting videos online.
Yes,
where he's saying,
asking for help.
He's saying, "Yeah, help me. This is a bum rap. And even with that." You know, media contact. They still can't find.
Yeah, well, I'm very happy for them.
Well, you were pulling for them.
I'm pulling for both of them.
Okay, and pulling for both of them now.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Hot in the summer.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know. I think one of them's trying to do a GoFundMe thing. I don't know how that'll work for him. You know, so yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, but the bigger news is that we've gotten rid of the penny. The penny is no more. They're not making the penny anymore, which doesn't mean we'll run out of pennies.
No, we got pennies.
Pennies come from heaven.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Pennies from heaven. I've heard that.
You know, but you know, you try to give the homeless some pennies, and they just look at you.
Yeah, like you're an asshole.
Yeah. You know, I gave this homeless guy a few days ago. I gave him an umbrella that I found. And he looked at me like, what the fuck is this? And I said, you'll need this. And sure enough, it did. It started raining like an hour later. You know.
Did he take it from you?
Yeah, he took the umbrella.
Okay.
He finally took it.
Hopefully he...
It was one of those like short umbrellas that snaps.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like this big.
Right.
And it just snaps open. It's some good coverage there.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, and... but he wanted money, but I didn't have any money
right.
to give.
Oh, well.
You know, so anyway,
beggars
the penny's
can't be
gone.
Choosers, as they say.
The penny's gone, and hopefully, you know, it's not too soon. Anyway, what else is going on?
Well, I was just as I thought about this earlier when they were saying the penny. It's like, well, what are we going to do with the penny loafers? But as you said, I think we got plenty of pennies to last us the rest of our time. Certainly, our time is short.
Yeah, so. I don't have much time. Yeah. Spit up, Renee. It's
Yeah,
so anyway, that's going on, and then the riots are happening all over the country.
Oh, yeah, back in your old neck of the woods.
What was it? Sorry. It started over the weekend. I was telling my wife, you know, they went down to Santee Alley, the garment district in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
and I told my wife when ICE was there, I said, you know, ICE should learn that there are neighborhoods in L.A. you shouldn't go to.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of them.
Oh, yeah.
You should not go to that neighborhood.
Because it's more than you're bargained for.
Well, of course it has. Look at what's happened.
Right. You're not trained
2,000 Marines right. there. There's 2,000 Marines. There's L.A. You know, there's all these people Trump's called in. Because, and it's in every city. I mean, there's neighborhoods in New York, Chicago, you know, San Francisco. Not this town, but those towns. That they're not getting. There's that great scene in Casablanca where Rick is beginning the movie and he's talking to those Nazis,
mm-hmm.
and they say, Mr. Rick, how would we're marching through Paris? What about marching through New York? And he goes, there'd be a few neighborhoods I'd stay away from. He told those Nazis.
Right.
I don't remember the exact wording, but that's basically what Bogart said. And that's the same way. You know, they've just gotten a world full of shit now.
Now, once you have this, and the populace is all riled up, and but you know our fearless leader, you know, is ego driven,
right.
So he's wants to win the pissing contest, and so actually I saw an article today where they're saying yes, this reminds me a lot of other protests I've seen, except this seems like it could get way worse.
Yeah, I think so. People are angry, you know. And they can get their message out there a lot faster. And I saw something, are they protesters or are they instigators? That's a huge thing. Now, I think the L.A. thing, the other cities have seen pretty peaceful marches and stuff. But the L.A. thing is, you know, you're just taking people and not giving them their due process. This is basically what it is.
Right.
Taking them from their job and saying, get in, never see your family again.
Right.
That kind
of
thing.
Right.
We don't know where we're taking you, but you're gone. So that's going to anger people. And I remember, you know, being in L.A. during the Rodney King riots. See, what people don't understand right now, if you look at the map of L.A., L.A. is a huge city.
Mm-hmm.
The protests are in a very, very small part of L.A.
Right.
The rest of L.A. is going, doing their business.
Right.
You know, I talked to my sister. She lives in, she goes, it doesn't affect me at all.
Right.
You know, I feel for it and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't affect me at all. Whereas, like, the Rodney King riots, the injustice with that, I mean, that was all over.
Mm.
People went to Beverly Hills and started throwing things through glass windows, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
That
right.
went everywhere.
Couldn't ignore it. Yeah.
You couldn't ignore it. It was from the valley. And I remember being in Echo Park. Me and my roommate got on the roof of our house and basically saw Koreatown going to flames.
Yeah.
We saw La Brea. You were there too? Yeah.
I was there.
Wow.
Yeah. Went to do my first Hollywood film in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
First morning. Hello.
Burn, really?
Burn Hollywood, burn. Yeah. No, oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, it's different. But I think, see, this thing here has given everybody a voice.
The telephone.
Yeah.
The iPhone.
Yeah, this thing here has given everybody a voice. And I don't know if that's such a great thing at times, but I guess it's okay. I don't know. You know, some people shouldn't talk, you know?
Right.
Who's that?
Oh, I think people are walking in and looking at us with a sense of recognition.
Oh, okay. Anyway. That's all. It's happening.
Yeah.
It's all going to hell. But here, they'll just have a festival. We'll forget about
it.
A parade.
Oh,
we'll forget about everything, you know.
Eric and Aline. All right.
Oh, hey,
shout
man.
Out to them.
Hey, Eric. What's
part of the troubled wives' auxiliary, as we call them.
That's not what I call.
That's not what Manny calls them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we did have some very sad news that I was not. It's not unexpected, but still, you know, sad nonetheless. Is the loss of the great Sly Stone yesterday, and you know, Sly Stone is a guy who. There's a terrific documentary that Questlove did on him. I think it might be on Hulu right now or something, but man, oh man, it's fantastic. And you really can see in that documentary how people go like, wow, Sly went crazy. Why did he go crazy? Or, you know, he had everything, he had achieved everything. He was at the top of the game. And really, that was it. When you've achieved so much, that you're now just topping yourself and you've raised the bar so high, at some point it starts rattling you. It's like, I don't know if I can keep doing this. And if drugs are available to kind of quench that anxiety, then you know that's what people will often opt for. And unfortunately, Sly, you know, got into that bag and was never able to really get out. But man, oh man, the accomplishments, the genius of what he did, man. That's something else, man. Live forever. So anyway, shout out to the great Sly Stone. And on more local news, but no less a great talent is Bob Andrews, terrific keyboard player, played with Bremsley Schwartz. Part of the English pub rock scene, played with all kind of people, and he lived here for many years. Played with John Mooney. I did lots of gigs with him. We lost him over the weekend. So
English Bob.
Shout out to English Bob.
All right.
So that's we cleared the decks. That's all I got. Should we bring the guest in here?
Sure.
Excellent. Well, it's a fantastic guest. We've known each other for a long time, but I got to say, on this little trip we did, it was an intimate trip. We got to hang out more than ever. I heard some stories that I was telling, and he jumps on and he knows all this. I'm like, how the fuck do you know these people I'm talking about? Anyway, we'll get to that.
Snake and Jakes.
He's like, okay, well, I think that's the pre-Snake and Jakes. But anyway, he's a true Renaissance man. He's a singer, harmonica, and accordion player, a band leader of his own band, Sun Pie and the Louisiana Sunspots. He plays all over the world, including tours with Paul Simon, Paul McCartney, Sting. He's also a nature lover. He's spent over 30 years as a ranger for the National Park Service and also played pro football for the Kansas City Chiefs. I know a team that you don't care for, Manny, you being a Raiders fan.
I hate
fan.
The Chiefs.
Anyway, we're going to get into all that and more. Without further ado, the great Mr. Bruce Sun Pie Barnes. Welcome, Sun Pie.
Oh, thank you. Good evening,
Welcome.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, you're saying it's been a while. That's my foot you're tapping right there. You know that.
You guys spent some close time
now.
Together, didn't you? You guys had some close time in Hawaii.
We had some intimate
together.
Time in Hawaii.
Yeah. Tapping his foot and everything. But, I get it.
So you're saying it's been a while since you were in Snake and Jake's.
It has. The lights are just as red as ever. So I'm right at home. Looking pretty nice in here, actually.
Yeah, well, not too much changes here. The change is
it still stinks as always. So that
very
never
slow.
Changes.
Yeah, smells like New Orleans. So.
Smells like New Orleans. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I always describe as like New Orleans is like if you go to the coolest party you've ever been to and you go up to the prettiest girl in the room and you smell her armpit after she's been dancing for an hour. That's what New Orleans smells like. I don't know. So Sun Pie, you've had a terrific career here in New Orleans, but wow, it's a lot of thunder out there, huh? I don't think the
are
mics
you
are
from
picking
New
that
Orleans?
Up.
No, I'm not. I'm from a little small country town called Benton, Arkansas, Gravel Hill community. I moved to New Orleans. You know, Arkansas is called a land of opportunity.
Really?
And I had the opportunity to get
leave?
Out of there.
Yeah,
when I was exactly. pretty young. My family, yeah, well, you know, I had relatives in Louisiana, and we used to visit. I have an uncle that was named Sun Pie, actually, from a little town called Bastrop, Louisiana.
He was, now, what is Sun yeah. Pie? Is that just a nickname? Or why not Moon Pie?
That's what I was going to say. Is
like,
that
a sweeter.
Play on Moon Pie? Or?
No, it wasn't a play on Moon Pie. It's like a Native American name.
Oh, okay.
Really?
So, yeah, it's kind of like the translation. Of
and now that relative, he was a blues harmonica player, if I recall, right? And
piano player. My dad played harmonica.
Oh, okay.
And his uncle played harmonica. But no, this uncle, Sun Pie, he was my favorite uncle.
Oh, he's a piano player. But he was part Native American, right?
Yeah, yeah. What they call Blackfoot in Louisiana, Le Pied Noir. Not like the Blackfoot up in Canada. These were folks, if you know North Louisiana, you know where Poverty Point and all these big Indian mounds are.
Uh-huh.
That's where all my folks are from.
Oh, okay.
A little place called Bayou Bonnie.
All right. So, well, tell us about life when you were young there in what'd you say, Benton?
Or Benton, Gravel Hill? No, rural. Yeah, all the people that came out of the community I was in was kind of made up from sharecroppers that came out of the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
Like my parents and all my relatives, I remember being, you know, just young people knocking on the back door in the middle of the night. It would be a family, you know. You had to get out of there. So we'll
talk about like sharecropping in those days. Like it was the kind of thing where you know, you belong to the country store. Like you owe money, so you gotta be there. Working to work off the debt that you have, and you'll
wooden
they
nickels,
set it up
whole,
so,
yeah,
so you'll never get out of debt.
Yeah, that was all my relatives. Well, you know, my dad was born in this little place in North Louisiana. The town is called Mer Rouge, but they were from Bayou Bonnie. So all of his relatives, my father was born in 1909. Mm. His dad was born in 1849, my grandfather.
Wow. Yeah. That's some old parents, man. Your grandfather was born.
Right. Wasn't some of them? It was all of them.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I know about.
So you came from a big family. You had a lot of brothers and sisters.
Yeah, 10 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
My mother come from a family of 13. My father, same thing. My oldest sister was born in 1928.
Holy moly! Now
yeah,
all these
10 children.
All these relatives.
When were you born?
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
63.
Oh, so you're same age as us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Manny's a month.
Monagahai.
Yeah.
Cato said Monagahai. Yeah, but I had lots of relatives that were, you know, I had Uncle Joe, and yeah, no, these dudes were 108 or 9 years old. Yeah.
So, what's it like in that community? Is a lot of people playing music? You grow up in that milieu of people playing house parties and stuff? Or
juke joints,
okay.
Music. Yeah, you know, people playing music in the house, in the churches, you know, the little small sanctified church.
Okay.
Pentecostal churches.
So y'all
Baptist churches.
Y'all attended Pentecostal church?
Tent revivals. Yeah. That's where the Pentecostal church came
did
from.
Did you
that
hear
area.
About 2 weeks ago, maybe you guys were not in town, but there was a pothole in New Orleans, I think towards the east or somewhere, that it was so big. The Baptist church was doing baptisms in it.
Oh, really?
Did you hear that?
That's how I wrote. I did hear about it.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, we used to have the baptisms in these bayous and sloughs, and me and my brothers.
But not in a pothole.
Not a pothole. We used a bayou.
Okay, yeah.
But they would send us down there to go clear out all the water moccasins.
God.
They didn't mind snakes, but they didn't want all the poisonous snakes in
right,
there.
Right,
so, like, on Friday and Saturday before the Sunday baptism, you know, our gig was.
So how do you get rid of the moccasins?
Well, you know, I was catching snakes and selling them when I was like 11, 12 years old. We sold them to a guy who would send them to this venom hospital down in Florida.
Oh.
$20 a piece for a water moccasin.
Like to make anti-venom?
To make anti-venom and also for heart patients.
Huh. Oh, okay.
They use it for arthritis, they use it for heart patients.
Snakes and moccasins?
Moccasins, copperhead, rattlesnakes.
Oh, wow. And how do you catch
them? Yeah, I was going to ask, yeah.
You catch them as carefully as possible.
Right? Well, yeah.
Don't grab them by the tail.
No, you have to keep them alive.
Grab the tail.
You have to keep them alive? Or
they have to be alive. You can't, like,
you can't
crack
give them
over the head. But we made snakes. Sticks, little forked stick.
Oh, okay.
It was a good gig, except all my friends got bitten except for me, so I decided I would shift over to another.
Yeah, another gig.
One of my friends got bit, man. We out gigging for Catfish. He stuck his hand up in a hole, and he came out. We thought he was playing.
Uh-huh.
Water moccasin had him right in the, just right in the hole of his hand, just stuck in there and bit him five times, just chewed him up. And then we had to take a little K-bar knife, you know, and cut him up, and we try to suck the venom out.
Right. Of course.
And we were like 7 miles down the woods, so we got to like take turns toting him on our back, we're telling him like, hey, don't panic, don't get all nervous and stuff.
Right, your heart starts pumping more, it brings the
right?
venom.
Yeah, like that's like the thing you're not going to do at that, you know, 7 miles is a good walk.
Oh, yeah.
You're carrying somebody on your back, but. Luckily, we.
So you sold him to that clinic in Florida.
Basically, yeah. No, he was in the hospital for 2.5 months.
Oh man!
But, his hand was bigger than his leg.
Oh.
A farmer came along and saw us, and he gave us a ride to the hospital.
So did he make it okay? I mean, your friend.
Not only did he make it, he didn't learn anything. They had to lance off the skin every day to keep. It was trying to save his arm, basically. Uh-huh. So they kept lancing it off and shaving it off and grafting it on. I mean, they grafted everything, including his 2 cents that he had in his head. He kept on catching snakes. We the peak of it for me was we went to a rattlesnake roundup in Oklahoma. You know, these people were catching. I thought we were pretty crazy, but no, they had hundreds and hundreds of rattlesnakes. You know, and it was like, how many snakes can you catch in a certain amount of time.
Oh, it's a contest.
And people just getting bitten. I'm talking timber rattlers and diamondback rattlesnakes. Man, it's freaking.
Now, did you ever go to those revival things where they're
the handle snakes? That's what I wanted to ask.
Oh, snake handles. Yeah.
They had that in the Pentecostal church where you were around?
Well, that is a branch that came out of Pentecostal church.
I can
tell you that. The Pentecostal church came out of a place called Cotton Plant, Arkansas, which is...
Okay.
Where my relatives were. Mm. That's where, like, Rosetta Tharpe. She was, like, friends with my family and stuff. They all came
and
out
of the
same
church. That's where they do that weird, like... Is that
speaking in tongues?
Yeah, the tongue speaking,
Speaking in tongues. They have tent revivals the month of July. Church service all day and all night, 14 days in a row. Just amazing stuff. Out in the middle of cotton field. And the hardest part was the mosquitoes. I ain't gonna lie, because when you're sitting outside in the field and you're on a bench and you got the mother's board has got willow switches, you know, keep you awake.
Can't be fidgeting.
It's 2:30 in the morning. Right, oh, yeah. If you're jumping around, you better be shouting and singing and speaking in tongues.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that came from out of that kind of tradition. And,
beautiful
stuff. That's where all the best music on the planet came from.
Right, people really feeling it.
Al Green, all kinds of...
Yes.
Oh, my Lord, yeah. I mean, singing.
Well, so bring us forward from, you know, you have all these very strong influences, powerful, you know, people that really mean it. How do you get involved with playing music yourself?
Well, you know, we had a piano in the house, and my folks my dad would play harmonica every day. He'd come out of field or whatever, and I'd grab his harps and, you know, that's my earliest memory, actually. Uh-huh. It's like sitting on his knee, and he'd play a little song called "The Coon and the Hound," where he's barking like a dog, and, you know, I couldn't figure out where the barking was coming from in between the harmonica. And he would play, and I was like, I just thought it was some kind of magic. So I was like,
sure, it is.
I'm gonna get me some of that.
It is magic
when I get old enough. But all the people I knew that were like playing like that were like much older than me,
mm-hmm.
like in his age category. Like my uncle played barrel house piano. We had a man down the road, W.C. Collins. He played boogie woogie and that kind of style, barrel house. And the guy that played in the church. His name was Uncle Dave. He played slide guitar and, you know, that kind of stuff like that. So that's, you know, it was in the church or it was in the juke joint.
Right.
Juke joint for us was like 200 yards away.
Right, right. So how do you start playing music yourself?
Well, I would sneak my father's harmonicas and try and play them. I could never figure out how he knew I was playing his harmonicas. Maybe it was the bubblegum and Cracker Jacks all the time, but doing that, but he didn't like us like playing his harmonicas because there was always some
nobody
some
likes you to share the harmonicas
foreign objects.
Yeah, it's not like somebody sitting in on piano.
Got that many kids, but I was extremely attracted to it, so I started trying to bang on the piano, and he was giving all of my brothers and sisters piano lessons. It was a good idea, except it didn't really transfer from like the 44 Blues, you know, like this old man used to play. And that guy moved down here, Roosevelt Sykes. Mm-hmm. He was from Pine Bluff, right down the road from us. And all his friends and proteges, right. People like that, Bill Brunsey, Sonny Boy Williams lived about 13 miles from us.
Nice.
But the lessons from I'm just saying like it was, the lady over in the white quarters across the tracks, that's not what she was teaching. She was teaching piano lessons, but it was like Left Bridge Overture, right?
Right, 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 right.
It didn't turn into 44 Blues. It just never happened.
Sure.
And so I was just like, I learned to play by ear initially. Later, I started playing trombone in school band.
Okay.
And that was, I thought I was a natural born trumpet player, but they wouldn't let me play trumpet. They told me I had to play trombone.
Okay.
Now, does Zydeco happen when you come to Louisiana, or was it there in Arkansas?
I mean, I hear it in Arkansas, and then I know that, I heard that music. We came to Louisiana all the time.
Right.
In fact, they would bring us and drop us off at Aunt Fanny's house and Uncle Sun Pie. They would only take one child, but they'd come to Louisiana, to New Orleans, where the rest of the cousins were. And they would always come back with these stories about going to Fat Domino's house. And we were like, well, what is a Fat Domino, man? I want some of that. But that many children, they would only bring one because they wanted to have a good time. You know,
right,
it's not like you're coming with like that carload of
Yeah, what kind
kids,
of car do you even bring 11 was, kids in?
Well, my old man loved Buicks, so he was a hardworking man. He had an electric 225, the deuce and a quarter.
Deuce and a quarter.
Oh, yeah, hold like 40 people, man.
You can't fit 13 people in that car.
Yeah, but you can fit like 8 or 9 in it.
I mean, you can fit 8 or 9 in the trunk, but I mean,
it was huge.
You got to stack it like cordwood.
The back seat was like these giant sofas in here.
Sure, sure.
But they would like make my mama would fry like a couple of chickens, and bake a cake, and we would hit the road, Jack, and just roll. I mean, that man would never stop either. He was like, oh, no, can't stop in Mississippi. No, you can't stop over here.
Right,
can't stop over there. It was all these places.
Sure.
Had a dill pickle jar, right? Okay.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah, that was serious business.
Sure,
and,
sure, yeah.
You know, I remember when we had riots and stuff, like when segregation fell in Little Rock, we were very young, but they clamped down on the rest of the, it's exactly what's going on right now. They clamped down the rest of the state like an ironclad.
Yeah.
Like Little Rock was the only place where it was not segregated. So we all got broken up and bust in far corners of the universe. Like I lived next door to my cousins. They had to go to school 13 miles away.
Yep.
That's what they did. And then there was some riots that happened after. So every time there was a riot, we'd come to Louisiana and until it cooled down.
Yeah.
And if it was something going on in Louisiana, they would come up by us.
Okay.
So that's how it went.
Right, right. Looking for
I moved down here.
Calm waters.
1987.
Well, we're skipping over a bunch of interesting stuff here.
No, go ahead.
So you're playing trombone in the school band, but then you're also a great athlete, right? At this time,
I was doing all right. I was like an average athlete compared to these maniacs around, where I was raised up at. Huh. Everybody was an athlete, so.
Well, somehow you wind up going to college and being an All-American.
I did do that. Yeah, well, I figured out the long game of what athletics was. That was the part you had to see where's the value in it. Because, I could tell you that, we just had tremendous athletes all around.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Henderson State University.
Henderson, okay.
Which is kind of southwest Arkansas. It turned out a lot. It's a small school. But turned out a lot of
athletes,
tons of them. You know, they would, yeah. I mean, this school was like 3,500 people, but.
And you, football or baseball, basketball, all three? Or
I was
hockey?
Running track and playing football initially, and then I didn't do hockey. Couldn't even spell hockey. All I knew was like, the best joke about hockey was, hey, man, let's get the puck out of here. You know? I ended up with a full scholarship in football. Track, I did good in track when I was in high school. In fact, I went to the decathlon.
What's your 40?
My 40 was 4.5.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I was a little bigger than I am, right? You know, if you 240 and you're running 4.5 40.
4.5 is good.
But I ran hurdles. I was a high school hurdling champion.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, 230-pound high school hurdling champion.
Wow.
That's much bigger than a normal
hurdler,
right?
So what was your vertical?
41 inches.
41, that's good, too.
Yeah. I was too rough for basketball.
Yeah.
Although I played, you know, I tried it, but baseball, right. Football, track, that kind of stuff. But, yeah, you know, I wanted to get that education, so
what was your major? Football. Besides sports, what was your major?
I studied biology, ichthyology, marine biology, plant taxonomy.
You always had that impulse towards naturalism, towards nature and
when I was
outdoors.
In second grade, I had the master plan. Second, third grade, I was like, okay, I'm going to work with Marlon Perkins and Jacques Cousteau. And I stuck to the plan all the way through to my senior year of college. I took a 24-month scuba diving course.
Wow.
Marine biology, ichthyology, freshwater, plant taxonomy, dendrology, ornithology, everything. Paleontology.
Okay.
My only problem was Jacques Cousteau
died.
88 years old. Yeah. He died. And then Marlon Perkins died right behind
him. Yeah.
Perkins wasn't, that was the Mutual of Omaha show.
Yeah, yeah, Omaha. Yeah, yeah. So I was like stuck like Chuck, you know? I was like, damn.
And didn't Philippe die also?
Well, Philippe Nim took over the Calypso, and he just was not the same. And
but he also died in an accident.
He did, and they brought the Calypso to Texas A&M.
Oh.
Right? So they had a station over there. So I was like, well, okay, well, I'll go to A&M maybe. And other place was Oklahoma State and Stillwater. They had a pretty good program. But then I noticed that all of the folks, you know, I was I had like 53 scholarship offers when I was coming out of high school. So I did pretty good with football and track. And
I used to love those Cousteau specials.
Oh yeah,
in the 70s.
Oh man,
I used to love those.
Oh man, I was
the
all
way
over
he
that.
Narrated them.
Yeah, bro. He, you know, well, you know, he came up with this modern day scuba tank.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
You know, my option was, since they up and died, attrition, you know.
Sure. That's a bitch.
they had a program with the National Park Service that was cooperative education. So I was like, well, looks like I'm going to go this direction. So I started working at the Buffalo River up in northern Arkansas in the Ozarks.
Nice. I love it's beautiful, beautiful country, huh?
Beautiful.
But
and
like Cousteau used to say thing, the puffer fish does not know that it should be eaten right now. It will be eaten right now.
Yeah, right.
And then some other fish would just eat the puffer fish. It goes, bon appetit.
Yeah, bon appetit. That was the same thing with Marlon Perkins, right? Okay. Well, I will stay safely in the Jeep while Jim wrestles the Cape Buffalo.
Exactly.
To
he always
the
had
ground,
Jim the
and
assistant.
I will record the data.
Jim got bit by a snake, but I'm fine.
The anaconda got it.
Anaconda
almost killed Jim there.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. And I had the assignment to go to the exact place where, when I was working for the Park Service, I was like, I'm going to get that anaconda for this dude. Because he, you know, Jim couldn't handle that one. So in the state of Pará in Brazil, in the Amazon, I got the assignment and then, lo and behold, the federal government shut the budget down, so I lost that. We had a lot of international assignments that you could do for like 6 months.
Probably for the best, I would think, don't you think?
Maybe. I'm confident that I could handle it.
Well, Manny, I'm looking at the clock and my drink here, and it seems like it's about that time.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Pie, we're going to take a break.
Yeah, time for a pie break.
Yeah, there we go. We'll be right back.
The coon and the hound. See, years ago where I come from, way back in the woods, they used to call up the hounds to go out on a coon hunt, and they'd take a single barrel shotgun and break the barrel down. They would blow on the barrel, call the hounds up. You hear the hounds get all riled up, and they get ready to go out on the hunt, you know. And them dogs would get to barking. They get out there chasing. They'd get after that coon, get in a big old fight, and then the coon would usually win anyhow. But them hounds would get in that fight with that coon. You hear the horn blowing, and the dogs get out on that hunt. Sounds something just like this here.
Yes.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Komen. Back with our guest, Mr. Bruce Sunpie Barnes. Now, Bruce, I know that you're kind of new to the podcast, but for all of our listeners, devoted listeners out there, they know that this is a listener-supported operation here. And we don't have any corporate sponsors. We've had people threaten to sponsor us, but so far nobody's...
Shallow
threats, indeed. But we do have a PayPal link and a Venmo link in the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook page. And our devoted listeners, send in support. They buy us cocktails, help defray our notebook costs. You can see we're both very analog here, pen and ink.
Wonderful thing.
You know, someone was telling us... there's in fact no artificial intelligence. In fact, Bruce, sometimes no intelligence at all, artificial or otherwise. But no, it was Quentin Tarantino was saying how when you write with a pen or a pencil in a notebook, that the pen is like an antenna to God.
That's right.
And I thought, ooh, I like that.
Directly.
I like that. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, you can use these links to support the podcast.
What if you don't believe in God? So what's the pen? Just mightier than the sword?
Sure. There you go. Okay. There you go. Anyway, also we have a Patreon page and the link there. We have a handful of patrons that are supporting us week in and week out. Thank you. And this week we're relying on those patrons because we don't have any PayPal or Venmo links.
And Father's Day is coming up, so you might want to get your father a T-shirt.
Yes, yeah, we do have the, thank you, Manny, we do have the Troubled Men podcast T-shirts. The link is right there in those same show notes.
Yeah.
And also follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars, helps us a lot, costs you nothing. Also, the Iguanas have started our residency at the Carousel Bar and the Hotel Monteleon. That'll be going on for a while. The first one was a big success, and it's every Sunday from 7 to 10 there. The Carousel Bar, it's a place I've been going since I'm a kid because it's the weirdest place. You know, like, it's a rotating bar. Now, when you had Top of the Mart, which is, you know, top of the International Trade Mart,
yeah,
you know, it's like 25 stories tall, and it would rotate, but you'd see the whole... city, you know, as you would go, as you would rotate around. Now, Carousel Bar is on the first floor on Royal Street, so you're not, the view doesn't really change, but it's very weird, and that's what I liked about it right from the start. It's like, it's a weird, it, you know, it has a circus theme to it, you know, it's a little bit kinky now anyway.
You're lounge playing seats. While it's rotating?
We're playing, we're not rotating. The bar, the people at the bar are rotating. We're stationary playing in that room towards the people.
I would get nauseous, I think.
Well, it's so slow, man. It takes an hour to make one revolution, so you would barely know that it's moving.
You can change friends in that time period, but you won't really...
It takes a nation to make a revolution, baby.
There you go. I like it. I like it.
You know.
Anyway, yes.
I don't need to sit down and rotate like Happy Days.
Right, right, right. Sit on a potty.
Rotate.
That's what they used to say. Yeah. Another one they used to say, Welcome Back, Cotta. They had that up your nose with the rubber hose.
Right.
Remember when that was a catchphrase?
Do you know that they were going to make that show was so successful that... somebody at NBC was going to make a show called Welcome Back Hitler.
Okay.
But they made a pilot, but it...
didn't play.
It didn't play.
Yeah, right, right. I could see that.
You know, but I saw pieces of the pilot. It looked pretty good. You know? And Tom Bosley played Adolf Hitler.
Okay, well, that's an interesting casting.
Yeah, Tom Bosley.
Yeah.
It was him. It was down to him and Larry Linville.
Okay.
You know, Larry
Linville. Manny comes up with all the old sitcom actors.
It might be a hit nowadays. I don't know.
Probably could be.
You know, we lost somebody that Larry Linville was close to, and that was Loretta Swit.
Loretta Swit. Yes.
Yeah, Loretta Swit.
Huge loss.
Yeah.
Hot Lips Houlihan.
Mm-hmm. Who became, after her career kind of died in Hollywood, she became a jeweler.
Really?
She used to make her own jewelry and stuff. And. Somebody told me that they bought some work from her at some convention in L.A. a few years back. So she was a jeweler.
Okay. Well, you see, you never know what's going to come up on the Trouble Man podcast. So maybe we may be talking about Loretta Swit. You know, we talk about Larry Linville. Who knows? Anyway.
Historical moments.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's enough of that. Back to our guest, Mr. Bruce Sunpie Barnes. Now, so Sunpie, you were just talking about your athletic career, and then also as you're becoming a park ranger, you know, you have all these competing impulses. Now, do you see them as kind of in concert? You know, like they're all like your naturalism, your musical impulses.
I mean,
you see that as all related, kind of, huh?
Speaking of analog stuff, when I was in the summer of going into the 11th grade, in between the 10th grade and 11th grade, I sat down with a notepad, one of these legal pads, and in front of a mirror, and asked myself who I was, and what I wanted to do in life. So I just wrote down the top 10 things that I dreamt about and that I wanted to be, and I wrote down the top 10 things that I didn't want to be.
Oh, really? Okay. Pros and cons. All right.
Yeah.
What were some of those?
Oh, you know, I didn't.
Dope fiend.
Incarcerated.
Incarcerated. Dope fiend. Didn't want to be like jobless. I had a process of thinking about it. I wanted to be a musician, but I didn't want to be a starving musician. So I was like, I need to have a job.
So you didn't want to be those guys in the corner with their guitar case out, you know, people throwing change.
Well, I just called it a starving artist and I didn't even know what that was, you know. I grew up in rural Arkansas.
Everybody was starving. Nobody knew it.
Hey, bro. When I was in 12th grade, we shared a mule with our neighbor, and the mule died, and, you know, I was pulling the plow for a while. So I knew.
Did you guys eat the mule?
No, we didn't eat it. This mule was older than I was.
Okay.
You know, it was like older than me by like, it was about 40 years old.
Do people eat mules?
They do. In Italy, though, when my wife was there in some rural part, they said, well, we have horse and mule. Horse, we have to cook for a day. Mule, they have to cook for 2 days.
Oh,
there's
God.
A place called Bocca di Mule.
Oh.
In northern Italy, close to Rovigo. And it's not that bad, you know.
I had horse in Germany.
Yeah.
It was all right. Okay.
You know. It's not better than Nutri-Rat or anything like that.
They served it with French fries, so that was okay.
It's That's exactly what they did.
I was
going
to make
a
dope joke when you said horse, but I figured I'd just let it go.
Good idea.
It's a real,
well, that
real
was Berlin.
Old school term.
That was Berlin.
Sure.
I had the horse in Heidelberg.
Right.
I love Heidelberg, man.
And I had the mule in Dachau. No.
I've been to Dachau.
I've been to Heidelberg also. Great beers in Heidelberg.
Okay.
You're deciding what you want to do. You have your list.
Deciding. Right.
So you have your list.
I stick to my list, and
the list worked out. Now I think that's
a
good.
Did work
that's
out.
That's a good. Now our audience is not. We don't have any young people in this audience, but I often want to elicit.
Maybe young at heart. I mean.
You know. Well, yeah. It's the best thing to be. You know? I can't remember the song.
Do what you can.
But these things that where you have some self-examination, you really get in touch with what your motivations are. Those are important moments in an artist's life.
Yeah, well, I sat down, started doing some reading. I figured out I had to save myself from a bunch of shit that was, just like around me.
Right.
And I was like, well, how do you do that? And in the process, I started having conversations with a lot of people that were like much older than me, like I had lots of relatives like that. So I was being observant, but also I was kind of comparison and contrast. I was doing comparative lit,
mm-hmm.
oral stories that I got from relatives and friends and neighbors. And then I was reading a lot of Socrates and Plato, like the world of appearances, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like what is the actual versus like shit that's not real, which applies a lot to today's world.
Yes.
Like social media.
That's not real.
That's not real. It's not something that I'm not going to say I couldn't have that, but it's not what I really want. So I wanted to have a value system that I could always rely on no matter what I was doing and what someone presented to me that I could say, this is a part of who I am or what I'm trying to do, or it's not. So it helped a lot, like real soon.
Integrity.
Right,
how to live a life with integrity.
Yeah, and like have your own, like I figured
that's
that
over for me.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
As long as I could.
I'm not talking about me either. I'm just talking about Sun Pie.
It's just where I was at that time. So sure, I was trying to figure out like where I could like figure that out. And I'm coming from nothing. I might end up with nothing. But I'm going to see what it is I can do. Because I think that like I can walk into a room and read a room, right? Figured out I learned how to do that in juke joints when I grew up as a kid.
Right.
I walk in there and get in everybody's head in the whole room exactly and know what they were thinking and what they were doing and like what was good about it and maybe what's not. But it's a thought process to learn how to navigate and negotiate and survive places. So, I was doing this when I was 12 years old because, I could walk in the juke joint like this and get a drink.
Sure.
Band playing, whatever. If you had the money and you.
They'd serve you.
They're going to serve you. You can get something to eat. You can get a drink. You can do all that.
Have you ever
that.
Walked in the room and just thought, I'm going to die?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
And I turn around and left. And
yeah.
Somebody got killed.
Yeah.
Like 30
exactly.
seconds after.
I've been there too.
Yeah. Lots of times in New Orleans. So I grew up in that rural community. But, I raised myself in New Orleans.
Sure.
That's how that go.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward. So you get a contract from the Kansas City Chiefs. You
play. I went to school first. I was
okay.
Were you drafted by them, or you were a free agent? Just
I had an agent. My agent screwed up the draft program.
What year is this?
He was dumb. This is 1985.
Way back then.
Triple dipping, and he misses the call. Like they get the call and they transfer the call to you,
right?
Or pick up the call, right? And get
it was way simpler back then. Now they have the big show and all that for the draft, but back
so
then
he's
it was
got
just
like 2-3 phones.
Yeah,
and he misses the call, so I was being drafted by the Chargers.
Uh huh.
That motherfucker missed the call. So the people who knew what was going on was like, hey, man, what you going to do? You turn that down? I was like, no, I didn't turn it down. And so I was like, what is it? And so, like, literally, I'm in a college dorm. This dude's calling me on a cell phone.
Oh.
I mean, not a cell phone, a damn pay phone.
Right.
It's a pay phone.
Yeah. Sure.
He calls me back in my dorm on a pay phone. And so he was like, oh, man, did you hear from San Diego? I was like, no, I didn't. And so I knew something was, like, going on wrong then. 10 minutes later, I get a call from a guy named Roy Green. So Roy was pretty famous. He played at Henderson also.
Okay.
But he was playing for St. Louis Cardinals. And he was the guy who had the longest kick return, you know, on record. And like 102-yard kick return on that. But he was like one of the cats that was like...
I remember Green, yeah.
Yeah, Roy Green. He was a great player. So he called me and he was like, Barnes, what happened? I said, man, I think the guy missed the call. And he was like, what? And so he's like, how could he miss the call? He's like, who in the freaking hell?
Who's your fucking agent?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Exactly. That's what Roy said. Roy was like, wait a minute. So he was like, he said, call him and tell him you're letting him go right now. He was like, all you need to do is give him a verbal commitment. You can send him a letter in the morning. They, you know, they had protocol to it.
Right.
So I called the guy back and told him that. And he said, don't worry. You're going to be on the team before the sunrise. And that's what happened. So instead, he screwed up the draft. I did that. I had to like wake up at the break of dawn, go hustle, you know, type up a letter, fax machine, da da da. And you know, by sunset, I was with the Chiefs.
Wow. Okay.
So was it the same round? The same round?
It wasn't the same round. Then I had to sign as a free agent.
Okay.
So I signed on with Roy's agent.
So okay, he so you did switch agents. Yeah, yeah.
Fire that guy.
It wasn't Lon Rosen, was it?
Huh? Yep. <No. laughs> I don't think it was Lon Rosen, but I probably...
Who was the coach of the Chiefs that year? I'm trying to
John
remember.
John McAvic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mac was the coach.
Yeah.
It was a kind of transitional time.
That's when they still had fired. Artificial turf at Arrowhead, right?
Yeah, that was like ruin your life.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It got me. Yeah. Like I got turf toe.
Turf
for
toe.
The first time. Yeah. I got turf toe. Because
first time
I
turf toe
grass.
Has come up on the Trouble Man podcast.
Man, it was trouble, baby.
Yeah.
It was trouble. It was just like some shag carpet stretched over concrete, right?
No, so, that's what it is. It's horrible.
Yeah, it was.
Horrible.
I'm like,
yeah,
looking
no,
around
no there, padding. Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, bruh. And so, but it was, you know, it was a good thing. So, you know, I get my first little check. I send it to my old man, you know.
Nice.
He's still working graveyard shift. He 87 years old.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And
he must have been so proud, man. He must have been so.
So you made the team. For that, for your rookie year, you made the team as a DB.
I'm a outside linebacker.
Oh, okay, outside linebacker.
Well, I was outside linebacker / defensive end because they're transitioning from the old 4-4, 4-3.
Okay. You seem kind of small to be a DE.
No, I was 245.
Okay, all right.
And that's average size, linebacker size.
Right.
You have to get rid of all that shit. And as you get a little older, you get wise, and you say, this is not what you need to carry around.
Right.
It's not
practical
in today's world.
No.
Well, you know, at that time, you know, I was...
So, okay, just so we'll wrap up this. But what's your highlight, your 1 year in the NFL? What did you recover a fumble? Did you intercept a pass? Did you sack somebody?
Yeah, well, you sack people all the time. That's my job, was to sack people.
What I did was
sign a contract with the USFL in the middle of it.
Oh, I see.
So we did, you know, hey, I signed a contract with the Generals, which was Trump's team at the time. Clandestine in the middle of the night. Nobody knows about this but me and them, supposedly, plus the other five cats who was rookies like me on the Chiefs. We sign these contracts, we go up there, you know, Herschel's playing up there, the Chiefs.
Herschel Walker,
You know, we go in there to the
because they were trying to poach NFL players just like the AFL did back in the 60s.
Oh, they were, and they had the lawsuit. So the lawsuit was the
Yeah, Trump's been in court his whole life, hasn't he?
Yeah, he loves it. He loves it.
Longer than his whole life. He was born into court.
Right, right.
And questionable and all that. But yeah, no, so they had that, and the monopoly was ABC, NBC, and CBS was monopolizing pro football.
Right.
And sports in general. Howard Cosell became the star witness for the USFL in that antitrust suit, which was with ESPN.
Right.
They won the suit.
Yes.
They got it was a antitrust suit. It was gonna the actual award was $1.2 billion.
Uh-huh.
A lot of money back then. But the judge awarded them $1. They ended up with $3.
Well, you know, cause I
so we all got blackballed.
When
also
wow.
Being in LA when the Raiders moved to LA, I got season tickets for the Raiders.
Yeah.
And the USFL was there also.
Rotten ass team, but and, the Raiders and the Chiefs, boy, they ain't
oh yeah, they don't like each other. Yeah. Anyway, but the USFL was so bad off. You could go to US, you know, buy season tickets for the Raiders for 8 games was back then like $250, which is
I believe it, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, crazy cheap for now, but USFL you could walk up and buy a ticket for $1.
$6, you was in there for sure, in a good seat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking L.A. Coliseum, 100,000 seats, yes. So $1 could get you very close or really far.
$1 will make you holler. You know
so let me know. Get back to the Chiefs real quickly. So you, how many games did you play? Did you play the whole season for the Chiefs, the 14 gamers?
I got up to the part where, well, they went to the playoffs that year.
Okay.
But we all got busted out before that. So, you know, when you're out there and you're doing your thing and they say, Barnes, Green, Oliver, Jones, go see the equipment manager.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good.
It's not good, yeah. So if I find your NFL trading card, what will your stats look like?
The stats were not gigantic because, you know.
You didn't play that much. I mean.
I played, but, you know, it was like, you know, when you're a rookie, you're coming in the first season, you know, you're doing what you're doing.
So you're talking 88?
No, 86.
86. So Bo Jackson's 86. Not in the league just yet.
Yes, he is.
Okay, did you have to go up against Bo?
I saw Bo when he played his first. Yeah, Bo went to the Raiders, but he was also playing for the Kansas City
Royals. Yeah, right, exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. So when he made that first home run, I was sitting
really?
Chair behind him.
Excellent.
Half asleep with a hot dog and a beer in my hand. Right behind the catcher's mound. So the deal was we would have practice.
Yeah.
And then the Royals had just won the series.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was actually the highlight of like being in Kansas City was the Adams Mark Hotel across the street from
because both stadiums are next door to each other.
They're
right
next door.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We practiced, and it was, you know, all the athletes just moved back and forth.
A lot of mingling.
All right, we got to move on from your football career, but one more question.
Yeah, man, we got to get
one more question about your football career. So you're playing for the Chiefs. What is your one highlight? I mean, do you have, like I said, was there a fumble recovery? Who did you sack? Did you sack, Joe Montana or...
He was in the league.
Yeah, I know he was in the league in the 80s and stuff.
Yeah, he was in the league. I think, you know, some of the more memorable stuff was like playing the Raiders and just seeing how nasty they were. You know, these people come with a giant 7-Eleven size gulp of piss, and when you come out to shoot, they're going to pour it on your head. that's what you get with the Raiders if you go to play the Raiders.
That's what people love about the Raiders.
I cannot lie.
It's a commitment. It's a commitment. It's a commitment to excellence.
That is like what you get.
Exactly.
Or just like the cross-state rivalry between the Cardinals and the Chiefs, you know.
That's rough,
crazy.
Too.
It's a bus ride, bro, you know.
Right.
You had to get on the bus and
but they don't have a team anymore, St. Louis.
Well, that's different. But at that time, that's what was going on.
All right. Well, we got to fast forward quick because we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast, and we haven't gotten to Sun Pie's music career yet. Well, you know, it's been covered so much. You know, we're happy. And the Trouble in Podcast, sometimes it's better for us to focus on the less covered issues. Yeah. But you wind up leaving football. They offer you a position in the Canadian League. You decide, right. I don't love football that much. I love nature. I want to be a national park ranger.
I did go back to my notepad. And the reason I played, you know, pro ball was because the opportunity was there.
Sure,
was
why not? Like, okay, who wouldn't? Yeah,
I'll check it out. But didn't want to have – I was committed to not – having lifetime injuries that I thought would slow me down.
Yes.
Especially I actually was very turf, forward man. Thinking about it. Yeah. And once I got turf toe and saw how hard it was to even bounce back from it, and I was wearing knee braces. Mm. They have a knee injury, but you know, they were like, "Oh, you crazy?" And but I also had some veterans like DeLon Cherry, different people like that. That was you know, a few people would like pull you to the side and actually, you know, talk to your coach, your counselor, and try and help you. You know, it's like the same time with Christian Okoye, all these different dudes. You know, we were all young rookies coming.
Well, that's the thing. In the NFL, the average career is 3 years.
Oh, yeah. 2.5, 3 years.
Yeah. But in order to make like a pension, you got to play 5 years, right?
That's right.
Yep. That's
and I was like, to hell with that. I'll get my pitch somewhere else.
Sure.
I can do.
Yeah.
Well, literally, I was like, I think I just was adamant about not wanting that many injuries. And everybody I knew had serious, serious injuries.
Well, because it's a collision sport.
Yeah. Well, it was also that turf at that time. Yeah, you know, like they had to water the field down all the time to just try and get rid of some of the resistance. You know, you look at somebody like Jim Dombrowski when you catch like that.
Yeah.
Man. And so.
So you decided on the forestry.
I decided I would go back to National Park Service, and you know, I went to Canada up there, and they had, you know, I had a choice of teams I could have played on, but I was like, you know, I'm okay with it because this was not actually on my list of dreams and things that I wanted to do. And I was all right with not, you know, a lot of people thought I was crazy, you know, like my friends and stuff. And they were like, oh, man, especially guys I played ball with.
Who looks crazy now?
What was your number? What was your number with the Chiefs? What was your
43.
Number?
43.
43?
But, yeah, you know, they was like, man, they was like, damn, boys, we knew you wasn't. You didn't give a damn about none of that. I was like, well, hey, man. You want that? Go get. But you know, a lot of them, you know, these are buddies of mine. But they, you know, like that is why they went to school. Period. You know,
right? Yeah. They didn't have the options that you had.
No, and I, you know, when I worked for the National Park Service, I had a superintendent who did a beautiful thing for me, and that is he froze my status, and he said, "I'm put you on leave without pay if you decide you want to come back to the National Park Service."
That's pretty cool, huh?
It's going to be here for you. Yes, that. That one thing right there was like.
What's your favorite park?
Wow, I don't know that
Volcano
I have a
National,
a
National Park. Now,
lately, it's Volcano National Park.
Now, I know it's not the one we went to 2 days earlier where the park ranger said, said,
get out.
This will blow your mind. You have to come back tomorrow because I'm going to give a talk this temple that will blow your mind.
Oh,
and we all went. Bruce was there. I was there.
All right, but
I told my wife. I said he blew my afternoon. Is what he did.
Yeah, he did. He was not an interpreted park ranger. And so
now that thing that he did with his zipper. Where he pretended that his fly was down. Do you think that he pulled it down and said, oops, and then pulled it back up?
He did some
that
of the
work. That was a bit, right?
Yeah, it was because it was not true. And not only that, he was not a trained interpreter.
Yeah.
Like,
I noticed park rangers always have the little sketches they do. Going to Yosemite as a kid, you'd go to these campfires and stuff, and the park ranger would teach you about this and teach you about that. And they all had a, you know, stick.
Yeah, I learned something about, I don't know, I just had a different approach to it. Like, I was always going to be, like, open, straightforward, and same thing I do when I play music. I'm going to look at the people in front of me, and I'm going to give them accurate information in the best way that I can assess that you. I'm really going to try and serve it up to you on a silver platter, according to who's in front of me, not like a canned speech or any of that shit like that, because I want you to actually, like, understand the depth of, like, what the interpretive conversation is about. So it's going to be different from that. And, you know, years later, you know, I end up helping to write what is called an interpretive manual for the National Park Service. That's like, how do you have the correct components to interpretation? You know, let's face it, the National Park Service was like a whole lot of other parts of the federal government. It was jacked up in a lot of ways.
Sure.
About, like, what is a national treasure? Okay, and then you have national treasures, and who are you talking to?
Because see, I think Gilbert Gottfried is a national treasure.
He was, for sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you know.
But now the park services are in disarray because of our president, right?
He's just yes, they are. They have dismantled, fired, gotten rid of most of all the ephemeral knowledge.
It's crazy,
of national parks. They've overtaken national parks. They've, you know, in their first administration, they got rid of Escalante's National Park and places like that so they could do angle drilling and take all the mineral rights.
And that's something that the American people love. We love our national parks. And look, going to those, even the dinky one we went to, that was fantastic. I mean, you know, that guy aside.
The story and the reasoning of it is like a real thing.
It's such a an amazing resource, and especially going to Volcano National Park, it was $30 for the two people in our car for 7 days, and you could spend 5 days cruising around there and seeing
you
stuff.
You get all the national park you can handle and a whole lot more. Or you can get the America the Beautiful Pass for $80 and go to any national park on the planet. And, you know, the National Park Service also has, like, agreements with about 128 countries. So, you know, around the globe, and that's, those things are, like, real stuff.
Yeah,
so.
But the bugs and crickets make me nervous.
Well, they don't have any bugs out there.
Well, there's bugs everywhere. They have a few bugs,
but they weren't, it's not like down here.
It's not like mosquitoes biting you.
There's bugs.
They're not coming to ravage you.
No. Yeah. Mosquitoes never bite me anyway. They always go for somebody else who's an easier target.
Good. Yeah.
Well, Bruce, man, we didn't even get to your music
career. Music.
Everyone knows about his career in music. He's a rock star. We all know that. Well, my wife said she used to dance with you when you played back in the 90s.
The Maple Leaf, maybe.
Yeah, she was. She danced with you a lot because she was very impressed that we were having you on the show. You know, because usually we have some has-beens. Yeah. You know, we don't have much on the show.
Yeah, you're right.
We actually have a name on the show.
All right.
Thanks for being here. And you said that you opened for Sting.
I played in a band with Sting and Paul Simon for about 2.5-3 years.
Oh, you played with them.
Now, what was that like? Talk about that a little bit.
It was good. I played, you know, a random call.
Playing harmonica, playing accordion, playing talking drum?
I played percussion. I played accordion, harmonica, sang, dance. I don't know. I just got a random call from Paul Simon out of nowhere on my government phone, by the way.
Okay.
On a Sunday when I normally have the phone
and you had just gotten bit by a snake.
Always off. 2013. And that was like a strange period because I had just done a tour with Joe Sample. You know,
From Jazz Crusaders.
And we went to Tokyo, did Tokyo Jazz Fest and all the stuff like that. And he wanted me to play accordion, and I did. And then he kept getting frustrated that he was playing accordion. He did this whole Creole thing. And he's like,
okay.
How come my accordion don't sound like his? And I was like, well, I'm playing a freaking $20,000 Potosa. But anyway,
there's levels to the game.
It was like a different thing. But, you know, like a month later, I got a random call from Paul asking me if I would, hey, man, you want to play some music sometime? And I was like, who is, you know. He was like, oh, this is Paul Simon. I was getting ready to cuss him out because I was like, which one of my knucklehead friends is calling me on this phone? First of all, it's not my regular cell phone. It's my government's phone. I just turned it on for a second to see if it was charging up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He was like, I was wondering if you want to play some music sometime. And I was like, it was so weird. Like, the voice was, like, so timid and weird. I was yeah, sure, man. And, you know, he invited me up to New York, and I went up and basically It was like an audition, but he had me come up and play.
Yeah.
You know, they were recording everything, but I was playing accordion, and they had a flamenco dancer dancing, okay. And I was like playing to the rhythms of the dancer.
Mm-hmm.
From there, you know, like a couple of weeks later, asked me I wanted to join his band.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I think I do. And I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I had this happen once before with Harry Belafonte asking me to join his band.
Oh, wow. A giant.
And I just...
A real giant.
He caught me off guard. I didn't know how to... I said yes, but then I said, well, when is this happening? It was like a Friday night. I'm sitting there with the answer phone on, you know, like the answer machine. And he said, oh, man, we're starting rehearsals on Sunday. And we're doing 6 weeks on Broadway. We're doing 3 weeks of rehearsal, six weeks on Broadway. And then we're starting in South Africa, and we're doing a world tour. And I was like, what? And I was like, which Sunday? And he was like, this Sunday. And I was like, this Friday night.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I was like, damn, if I do this and I don't make the band, like you, I do the audition or whatever, and I don't make the band, I'm out of a job. So... It just caught me off guard, and then I kicked myself forever.
Right,
this
right,
was
right.
In the early 90s.
And
I was like, why'd he even ask me that? And I just couldn't figure it out. But he called me up out of nowhere. I was like, how the hell does Harry Belafonte have my phone number?
Right. I'm living he got it from Henry. Paul Simon.
No, I'm living on Henry. No, he didn't know Paul Simon at that time. I mean, this is like practically 20 years earlier.
Oh, I got
you. So I was like, if I ever get a call like that again, I'm just going to say yes.
Pull the trigger. Yeah, right.
So
right,
it did happen. And, you know, I joined Paul's band, and we started playing music together, and we did some gigs. And then he called me up and said, hey, you want to do this tour? We're doing a tour with Sting. It's going to be Paul and Sting together, and we're going to do like a North American tour. And I was like, sure, man. And I didn't know what I was getting into. But, it was, you know, we did like 24 arenas around the U.S. and started in Houston and just went all around the U.S. and Canada. Came back, and I was like, wow, that was great.
So all your football buddies weren't shaking their heads then at you.
Right. And so I come back home, and, you know, and then he calls me up like about 3 weeks later and said, hey, Pa, did you like the tour? I was like, man, what? Yeah, I like the tour. And, you know, every show was sold out. I will say the Garden was like a highlight.
Two
sold out shows in Madison Square Garden.
Nice.
Excellent.
Incredible. And then he called me up and asked me, he was like, would you like to do that again? I was like, yeah, let's do it again. He was like, well, it's going to be a little longer this time. And I was like, okay. And I didn't know how I was going to get out of my job because I took a sabbatical.
Yeah.
And I had to have it approved like from D.C.
Right.
And the people in New Orleans, quite frankly, were giving me hell. They're like, oh, you can't do that. And I was like, well, shit, I've been working for Park Service for 30 years. I can take a sabbatical.
Yeah.
So, and it was the first one I'd taken. So when he asked me again, I was like, well, what? How long is it? He said, well, it's going to be 50 countries. And I was like, okay.
Yes.
Just said, yeah, I'm doing
yes.
it.
Say yes. That's
yeah. Thing.
So I had to figure out how to take a sabbatical again, but I called a guy in D.C. who's like the head of like Park Service. He was like, yeah, man, do it. He was like, he was like,
yeah.
He signed the papers and sent it back immediately. And nice. So,
how did the show go in Afghanistan? That's what I wanted.
We never made it to Afghanistan.
You never made it to Afghanistan.
Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi. Okay. All right.
And, but I, you know,
UAE.
It just so happened they had the Vera Visa program, and I was able to retire in 2015. It was just like it was the end of Obama's administration. They gave us 10 days to decide if, like a whole group of people, if you wanted to stay or retire and you get the full retirement benefits, $50,000 bonus. And I was like, I didn't know if I wanted to retire from the Park Service because I love, you know, the gig. But I was at the last second. I turn in the paper like with 7 minutes left, and you know, this is the government. It's ain't no retaining. I press enter, and then nothing happens. I was like, oh shit! I don't know if I'm out of a job. If I have, and then 3 days later, I get the congratulations.
Excellent.
You're
yeah.
retired. And then 5 days later, I was off on that tour.
Wow.
So it, you know, it was a long tour. It was like five months.
So that pro and con sheet that you drew up on the legal pad worked out after all.
That part did work.
Worked out.
So that was excellent. You know, it was a great tour.
Well, you know, I have so much many more notes, and we didn't get to figure out how you know Stanley Atkins, George Reinecke, and Nicky Sonsenbach, but you do, and that's enough. And you also have the North Side Skull and Bone Gang that you've revitalized, and you know, you're playing gigs all the time. So everybody, keep an eye out for Sun Pie Barnes.
Yeah,
and do yourself a favor. Fresh local product. I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sun
Thank
Pie.
Thank you, sir.
It's been great having you on here. And Sun Pie, as always on the Troubleman podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But, you know, the struggle continues on. Good night.
Good night.
Right. We are the North Side. Well, those Skull and Bone Gang, we come to remind you before you die. You better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry. We are the North Side, the Skull and Bone Gang. We come to remind you before you die. You better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry. Ashes to ashes, well, and dust to dust. You better clean up well before you come to us. You better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry. We are the North Side, well, that Skull and Bone Gang. We come to remind you well before you die. Well, you better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry. We are the North Side, well, that Skull and Bone Gang. We come to remind you before you die. You better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry. Ashes to ashes, and dust to dust. Whoa, you better clean up, yeah, before you come here. You better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry. We are the North Side, well, that's Skull and Bone Gang. We come to remind you, before you die. You better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry. We are the North Side, Skull and Bone Gang. We come to remind you, before you die. You better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry. Ashes to ashes, and dust to dust. You better clean up before you come to us. Well, you better get your life together. Next time you see us, it's too late to cry.